WPFP. Translator W276DJ at 103.1 FM Park Falls, Wisconsin. Broadcasting from an old rickety shack on the shores of the Flambeau River. This is Jack FM.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. No known credible threats at today's Super Bowl, but security in Las Vegas for the big game is extremely tight.
Today, progressively, roads will be shutting down here around the stadium. During the game, Department of Homeland Security, Black Hawk helicopters will be up protecting the area to intercept any planes or drones. Drones are banned for 30 miles around the stadium, and fighter jets will be in the air to also stop any kind of a threat coming from the sky. Alex Stone, ABC Sports, Las Vegas.
Rallying in South Carolina, GOP presidential frontrunner Donald Trump saying if he returns to the White House, he'd encourage Russia to attack NATO allies who don't pay their bills. The NTSB and FAA now investigating a helicopter that went down along the California-Nevada border south-southwest of Las Vegas. All six on board, including the CEO of one of Nigeria's largest banks, were killed. CIA Director William Burns expected to travel to Cairo this week for further hostage talks in the Middle East. This is ABC News. A 15-year-old accused of opening fire in Midtown Manhattan Thursday night has been charged with two counts of attempted murder, assault, attempted assault, and criminal possession of a weapon. Jesus Rivas Figueroa only recently came to the U.S. from Venezuela and is being charged as an adult.
Prosecutors in the courtroom told the judge that Jesus Rivas Figueroa poses a serious flight risk. That's right. He's remanded. There is no opportunity for bail here for this 15-year-old accused of shooting an innocent bystander and firing at police. Police say he's only been in this country for several months.
ABC's Anthony Carlo in New York. This week, House Republicans are going to try for a second time in just as many weeks to impeach Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. Republicans didn't have the votes last week, but this week, House Majority Leader Steve Scalise is expected to return to Washington after undergoing treatment for blood cancer, so they'll try again. Dave Packer, ABC News.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. A lot of Wisconsin farms are handed down from one generation to the next, but many new farmers start their operations from scratch. As Mike Moan reports, many of them benefit from leasing their farmland.
More than a third of Wisconsin farmland is leased, that according to federal data. Kelly Wolfert is a farm management outreach specialist with the University of Wisconsin Extension. She suggests renting land is the only real option for new and emerging farmers. That's because current market conditions put owning property out of reach, and these individuals also have to invest in things such as new equipment, creating even bigger disadvantages.
Land is very expensive when you're competing against farmers who have assets already built up that they can leverage in order to afford that land.
Her team is trying to educate smaller operations about the dynamics of leasing agricultural property and what their rights are. Wilford says it's important to make sure you have your lease in writing with clear terms. She adds that being more vocal about conservation practices you might deploy could help get a break on the cost of the rent. Steve Okanek, a regional educator with UW Extension, says lacking social connections in a farming community you're eyeing for production is another barrier.
Especially if you're a new person coming into a neighborhood, it can be very difficult. It comes down to networking.
He says you should treat your quest for land almost like a job search, where establishing trust and familiarity might result in more leads. This outreach comes as the nation sees an influx of beginner farmers trying to get a bigger share of the market. In the most recent census of agriculture, there was a 17% increase in the number of farmers with less than 5 years of experience. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
With another win. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. In college basketball, Marquette beat St. John's 86-75. The Golden Eagles have now won seven in a row. Another shocking loss for Wisconsin, this time to Rutgers, who beat them by 22 points, 78-56. Great defense by the Scarlet Knights. The Badgers now with a four-game losing streak. I'm in Las Vegas covering Super Bowl 58, where the 49ers are looking to win the Lombardi Trophy for the first time since 1994. Quarterback Brock Purdy, Mr. Irrelevant in the draft, says
it's it's sort of been like the story of my life, you know, sort of being overlooked, you know, throughout high school, not a high recruit or anything, and life sort of repeated itself. I got drafted last.
Chiefs trying to make it back-to-back championships. Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, I think just the opportunity to have a back-to-back championship. I mean, I got close a couple years ago and fell short. So just being able to be back on this stage and just having that opportunity and trying to make sure that we maximize that moment.
That's Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes from Super Bowl 58 in Las Vegas. I'm Mike Clemens.
This weather update is sponsored by Hansen HVAC, Heating and Cooling, your local Armstrong Air dealer of Phillips and Manitouish Waters.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Plenty of clouds for today with our highs getting up into the mid-30s. West winds 5 to 15 miles per hour. Overnight, mostly cloudy skies, a few flurries around, otherwise lows, upper teens to around the 20-degree mark. Still plenty of clouds Monday, highs in the mid-30s. Right now, it's 19.
You're listening to Radio Health Journal, the trusted news source for medicine, science, and technology. I'm Elizabeth Westfield.
I'm Shel Lustig.
And I'm Greg Johnson. This week, kidney stones are on the rise. So why is research so behind?
Despite it being a common condition that causes an incredible amount of pain, discomfort, and morbidity, we haven't had any real novel developments in decades.
But first, new research on the characteristics and traits of people who lie excessively.
Most people lie, but most people tend to be fairly honest most of the time, but there's a smaller subset that engages in quite a bit of lying.
All that and more this week on Radio Health Journal.
Tax Talk with Straight Talk.
You give and you give. This tax season, you get with Straight Talk Wireless. You get a reliable 5G network and unlimited data and a new Samsung Galaxy A15 for just $99. So you can give your janky phone to your kid.
Yeah!
Good talk.
Switch to Straight Talk for plans starting as low as $25 a line per month for 4 lines. Find us at Walmart and StraightTalk.com. For network management practices, visit StraightTalk.com. Device offer ends 4/14/24. In-store activation on single Silver Unlimited plan or higher required. Family plan discount with 4 lines all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Taxes and fees apply.
Hey, Joe Montana here. Back in my football days, I knew the importance of a strong defense. Now I'm sharing how you can help defend your health against pneumococcal pneumonia, a bacterial lung disease that can be life-threatening. If you're 65 or older or 19 or older with certain chronic conditions like diabetes or asthma, you're at increased risk. Talk to your doctor or pharmacist about vaccination and learn more at knowpneumonia.com. That's knowpneumonia.com.
Sponsored by Pfizer. Even though we're all taught to always tell the truth from a young age, most of us aren't so honest. Parents lie to their kids, employees lie to their bosses, patients lie to their doctors, and vice versa. But experts say that while the majority of people tend to lie now and then, they are, for the most part, honest. Dr. Christian Hart is a professor of psychology at Texas Woman's University, director of the Human Deception Laboratory, and co-author of Big Liars, What Psychological Science Tells Us About Lying and How You Can Avoid Being Duped.
Most people lie, but most people tend to be fairly honest most of the time, but there's a smaller subset that engages in quite a bit of lying. Through a number of different analyses, we've kind of honed in on this notion that big liars are those people who are in about the top 5% of liars, so at the very peak of the distribution, and they tend to tell 5 or more lies per day.
Hart says dishonesty emerges in childhood, around age 3. But is the habit of lying a product of nature or nurture?
We see that when it comes to dishonesty, there is a heritability of about 30%. And so about 30% of the variation you see in lying from person to person seems to be due to the genes they've inherited from their biological parents. But the vast majority can be explained by the environments. And so people who lie excessively, one of the patterns we see is early in life, they tend to be in fairly punitive environments. So, you know, their parents or their teachers at school punish them for their wrongdoing. And so one way to avoid the punishment is just lie and say, I'm behaving, you know, as I should.
Another factor that probably won't come as a surprise is that children tend to model the behavior of their parents. They might become big liars if mom and dad often lie or promote an environment that's accepting of dishonesty.
For example, saying things like, well, lying's okay sometimes, or lying's not that bad. And then children tend to adopt those patterns. And then also with siblings and peers, people who are reared around friends and brothers and sisters that lie a lot will tend to take on lying quite a bit themselves. But a lot of it is really just habitual patterns. We all have habit patterns. In fact, if you examine your typical day-to-day experience, a lot of it is just a repetition of the very same things you did yesterday and the same things you did the day before. And so if people adopt these social patterns of sort of solving social dilemmas by using dishonesty, they tend to repeat those patterns over and over again. And lo and behold, it becomes second nature to lie.
But that doesn't mean these people are pathological liars. Dr. Drew Curtis is an associate professor of psychology and director of the Curtis Deception Lab at Angelo State University. He also co-authored Big Liars with Hart. He says big liars are not pathological. That condition is something different.
These are people that also do tell lies with great magnitude and or high frequency, but usually their lies are going to cause them problems in social relationships, occupations, or other areas of their lives, where that's not always the case for big liars. You know, big liars can lie and it not necessarily cause those same issues. So we separate those, and I guess the easiest way to think about it is pathological liars would be a subset of big liars.
One main distinction is that big liars haven't yet been recognized as a psychological disorder, but that doesn't change the fact that these people aren't being truthful. Because of this, you might wonder how Hart and Curtis can get accurate research when their subjects are masters at deception. How can they trust their participants? Well, Hart says that these big liars aren't usually trying to hide. In fact, having discussions about lying may be the only time they're comfortable telling the whole truth.
One of the things we find is that when we sit down and interview people, they tend to be pretty honest about their dishonesty. And we can also verify that what people tell us about their level of dishonesty matches their actual level of dishonesty. So, for example, if we have someone come into our lab who says, "I never lie at all," and then we put them in a contrived situation where they might be incentivized to lie, they don't. And those people who say they lie a lot, when we put them in a similar situation, they tend to lie quite a bit. And so we know that people tend to be pretty honest when we ask them in a non-threatening environment or situation about their level of dishonesty.
And just like many of us, big liars can feel that they're lying for a greater purpose. For example, telling a friend you love her new haircut when you might not actually like it seems like a helpful lie. But is it?
People who say they tell white lies, they might say my end goal is really to make someone else feel better or spare someone's feelings or something to that end, where, you know, they're not going to say I'm trying to be manipulative. But if you pushed it back and you said, well, yeah, you were being manipulative, they could say, okay, maybe I was, but to this other end or to this other goal.
These white lies can have big consequences down the road. Even ones as simple as the tooth fairy can potentially affect future relationships.
I've done some research on parental deception, specifically with telling children about Santa Claus, Easter Bunny, Tooth Fairy, these types of lies. And so, you know, you have parents that do that. The value of honesty is placed with a high premium, yet it's not necessarily lived out.
And though Curtis says lies about Santa Claus don't usually have a lasting effect, college students report less relational satisfaction with parents who lied to them as children. But how can you tell when someone is lying? Hart says people are generally not very good at detecting deception. Even polygraph tests are only about 80% reliable, which is why the results are not permissible in a court of law. The fact is that some people are just really good at lying.
Those people who are really good at lying are also really good at telling the truth. And what I mean by that is they just are very compelling and convincing people. And so they're compelling and convincing when they're being honest, and they're also compelling and convincing when they're being dishonest. And the patterns that we see is they tend to be very socially engaging.
And with the rise of television shows about catching criminals, many of us believe we won't be the ones to fall for their con. But all of that late night binging may not be as helpful as you think. Contrary to what many people believe, Hart says you can't tell someone is lying by just watching their mannerisms. So paying close attention to their eye movements or subtle facial expressions won't reveal a true big liar.
And so if we want to look at how people actually detect lying, what we find is that in the majority of cases, it's through evidence. You know, someone makes a claim. They say, yes, I was at a party last night. And then they hear from someone else who was at the party says, no, they weren't at the party. And so it's through the accumulation of additional evidence that we tend to detect lying.
Art says we can avoid being duped simply by paying attention to our situations and circumstances.
For example, in romantic relationships, someone might not want to know about their partner's infidelities just because it would be so painful and so difficult to deal with and might completely upend their lives. And so they'll just turn a blind eye. And so just simply paying attention is one way that we can detect lying.
Another method is to rationally think through the information we receive instead of automatically believing it.
But if we pause and we pump the brakes and we really consider what's being said and carefully consider the evidence, we're more likely to detect the signs of dishonesty. The problem is that's a very kind of cognitively labor-intensive process, which is why we process things automatically much of the time. Another strategy is simply to adopt a more skeptical approach. And, you know, none of us want to feel skeptical of people who are talking to us. And so I don't necessarily mean being cynical, but just simply asking what the proof is for the claims that are being made. And if we just simply look for the proof or look for the evidence, that can oftentimes help us root out those people who are being dishonest with us.
But even with all of this research, Hart says even he isn't very good at spotting liars. In his day-to-day life, he doesn't especially care if people lie to him. It's only in more serious situations, such as when making an expensive purchase, that he pays close attention to the truth.
I look for the evidence. I look for incongruencies in what's being said. And then also a good way to kind of position oneself to better detect lying is just to understand when people's motives are not aligned with your own. For example, if someone's trying to sell you something, their motivation is oftentimes to get as much profit as possible, and your motivation is to pay as little as possible, so your motives are to a certain degree at odds with each other. When we're in situations where our motivations are clearly different from someone else's, that's when I tend to really kind of focus in and pay attention.
But that's not to say that everyone who lies is trying to be deceitful. People make mistakes all the time. They might give false information and not be aware of the facts. Lying requires an intention to be deceptive. Hart and Curtis's book, Big Liars, What Psychological Science Tells Us About Lying and How You Can Avoid Being Duped, is available now online and wherever books are sold. You can learn more about Dr. Christian Hart, Dr. Drew Curtis, and all of our guests by visiting our website, radiohealthjournal.org. For more behind the scenes, follow Radio Health Journal on Facebook, Instagram, and X. This segment was written by our associate producer, Polly Hansen. Our lead producer is Kristen Farah. I'm Elizabeth Westfield.
Coming up, why are cases of kidney stones rising in adolescent girls? When Radio Health Journal returns.
Denise has been playing jazz for 40 years. Last concert, one of the musicians fell sick with RSV. Respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV, is a highly contagious virus that can lead to breathing problems. This time, she's choosing to help protect herself with Pfizer's RSV vaccine, Abrysvo. Abrysvo is a vaccine for the prevention of lower respiratory tract disease caused by respiratory syncytial virus, RSV, in adults 60 years of age and older. Abrysvo is not for everyone and may not protect all who receive the vaccine. Don't get Abrysvo if you've had a severe allergic reaction to its ingredients. People with a weakened immune system may have a decreased response to Abrysvo. The most common side effects are tiredness, headache, pain at the injection site, and muscle pain. Ask your pharmacist or doctor about Pfizer's RSV vaccine, Abrysvo, respiratory syncytial virus vaccine. For full prescribing information, please call 1-844-989-7284 or visit Abrysvo.com. Brought to you by Pfizer.
Kidney stones have been around for centuries. In fact, the condition was first mentioned in medical texts dating back to around 3200 BC. The stones are hard deposits of minerals and salt that have crystallized inside the kidneys. However, Dr. Greg Tashin, an attending pediatric urologist at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, says while many people focus on the stones as the issue, they're really just a symptom of a bigger problem.
They're a disorder in the way that your body handles minerals. And when you think about it like that, you can understand that you're at risk for these recurrent, painful, episodic events. But it's also important to recognize that there are so many other factors or health consequences that come with stones, such as an increased risk of kidney damage or chronic kidney disease, heart disease, high blood pressure, and even an increased risk of death with recurrent stones.
There's many factors that could cause stones. Your diet, environment, fluid intake, and more can all contribute to the crystallization. They can go unnoticed in your kidneys for years, but the painful symptoms will start if a stone breaks off and travels into the ureter, which is the tube connecting the kidneys to the bladder. That's when you'll feel the extreme pain and nausea often associated with this condition. And though kidney stones have historically affected middle-aged men, an unlikely demographic has been seeing a steady rise in cases over the last few decades.
Although stones affect about 11% of the people in the United States, it was once a rare, rare condition in childhood, but now is increasing. And with that, there are, number one, an increased number of children who have stones, but the evidence that's used to support decisions of how to treat those children is far weaker than it is for adults because it was once a rare disease and now no longer is.
So while more and more children are being affected, research is still trying to catch up. Unfortunately, the tides have shifted even more drastically than just age-wise. The rise in cases has had the greatest impact on young girls, a population that's already proven to have a historical lack of research.
Historically, it's about 3 men to every 1 woman who would get stones. Now, in younger individuals before 25 or 26, it's about 60% women or adolescent girls and 40% boys. So something has shifted really, really dramatically over a short period of time. It's not the genetics that are changing. Nothing changes in society that quickly in terms of genetic susceptibility. But I think our exposome has changed so much. All of the environmental factors to which we're exposed has changed dramatically.
For example, the FDA reports that most Americans consume much more sodium than the recommended daily amount, which is about 1 teaspoon of table salt. However, Tashin doesn't believe that it's the only factor to blame. It could help explain the overall rise in kidney stones, but not the gender bias. His research team has been focused on finding the why to this phenomenon so that they can develop new and effective treatments. The current treatment process usually starts with understanding why the patient developed stones in the first place so that they can be prevented in the future.
It begins with an understanding of what other medical conditions might be contributing to stones and how those might be optimized. But then it also includes simple blood tests to look for signs of incredibly rare but important to recognize genetic disorders. And the cornerstone of the evaluation for any patient with stones is a collection of the urine to look for those chemistries, those minerals in the urine that, if they are out of balance, can increase the risk of stone formation.
The urine test is done at home, and though it's an extensive all-day process, it can provide a lot of insight into what nutrients your body isn't able to process normally. But even if every patient took this test, some cases would still slip through the cracks.
About 40% of children have normal urine chemistries, meaning when you do that 24-hour urine test, everything looks fairly normal. They may have a low fluid intake, their urine volume may be low, but there aren't any of those fundamental differences in calcium or citrate or other minerals in the urine. And that's where I think we are really focusing on understanding what else is going on upstream, perhaps of the urine itself, that could be causing these stones to form.
Tashin thinks the answers could lie in the patient's microbiome and digestion process. Specifically, he thinks a cause of the stones could stem from a disruption in the gut microbiome.
We know that children who have taken antibiotics are at increased risk of stone formation, and that these individuals, especially earlier in life, have this disruption of the gut microbiome, and that may affect how one handles the nutrients either taken in through diet or as part of your normal, what we call the gut-kidney axis, that connection between the gut and the kidney, and then how that could impact the risk of stones forming.
And though antibiotics are great at fighting off infections, research has shown that they can disturb the gut microbiome for 6 months to a year. The balance of microbes inside your gut is essential for maintaining your health, so the imbalance that antibiotics create could increase the risk of developing kidney stones.
I'm not saying in any way that it's the antibiotics alone, but that could be one factor that we're seeing more commonly now than 30 years ago. We know that overall in the United States, the groups of individuals who are exposed to antibiotics the most, and especially unnecessarily or inappropriately, are children and women. That may be completely ecological fallacy that, you know, we're seeing trends going in the same direction. They're not causal, but it does cause at least one to pause and consider what could be contributing to this.
While we wait for research to unravel these mysteries, Tashin still has to treat his adolescent patients who are currently being affected. He says surgery is the typical treatment option. However, that approach may change when the patient is a child.
For example, some of the surgeries that are performed for stones are more challenging to perform in small children because of the size of the ureter. So what might be one procedure for an adult could be up to three for a child. And that means three anesthetics, the discomfort of surgery three times, the risks of radiation. So all of those are factors in the decision-making that would vary from a child compared to an adult.
But once the stones are removed, prevention methods like dietary and lifestyle changes become the main focus. The challenge is that each new patient requires a different approach.
I really consider this like a puzzle. So each bit of information is a piece of the puzzle. And one of the key pieces is, what is the stone made out of? What's the composition? The other pieces are, what do the lab tests show? What do the urine studies show? What are the genetics? And then as you put these pieces together, a picture emerges. And that picture will be different for every patient, for every child. And then it's tailoring the treatment based on that individual risk and really what those priorities are from the patient.
Some families will choose to limit or avoid medication altogether because of the potential long-term effects and solely focus on dietary management. Other families will rely on medication for a short time period to focus on preventing new stones from forming. Hopefully, these families will one day have the novel treatments that Tashin's group and many others are working on today.
Ideally, we want to be able to develop a probiotic that you can take this yogurt, and that would restore that healthy balance in your gut and decrease, you know, stone formation. That's the holy grail. It's going to take a long time to get there, but with our patients participating in our research and that partnership, I think that's a goal that we can achieve.
You can find more information about Dr. Greg Tashin and all of our guests on our website, radiohealthjournal.org. For more behind the scenes, follow Radio Health Journal on Facebook, Instagram, and X. Our writer-producer is Kristen Farah. Our production manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Greg Johnson.
Hey, it's your girl Lonnie Love, and this segment is brought to you by Metamucil. Are you ready to take charge of your digestive health? I know I am. That's why I'm teaming up with Metamucil for the 2-week challenge. Metamucil's 4-in-1 fiber helps promote regularity. Unlike many fibers, Metamucil's psyllium fiber gels to trap and remove waste from your digestive system, helping you feel lighter and more energetic after just 2 weeks. Try the Metamucil 2-week challenge today. Learn more at Metamucil.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Radio Health Journal returns in just a moment.
I'm still going for it, even with higher stroke risk from atrial fibrillation and a regular heartbeat not caused by a heart valve problem. Over a 3-year study, Eliquis apixaban tablets reduced stroke risk better than warfarin, and over 97% of Eliquis patients did not experience a stroke. A first stroke occurred in 2.9% of warfarin patients versus 2.3% of Eliquis patients.
Don't stop taking prescription Eliquis without asking your doctor. It may increase your stroke risk. Eliquis can cause serious and in rare cases fatal bleeding. Don't take Eliquis if you have an artificial heart valve, abnormal bleeding, or antiphospholipid syndrome. While taking, you may bruise more easily or take longer for bleeding to stop. A spinal injection while on Eliquis increases risk of blood clots, which may cause paralysis, the inability to move. Get medical help right away for unexpected bleeding, unusual bruising, or tingling, numbness, or muscle weakness. Medications such as aspirin products, NSAIDs, SSRIs, SNRIs, and blood thinners may increase bleeding risk. Tell your doctor about all planned medical or dental procedures. Learn more at Eliquis.com or call 1-855-ELIQUIS.
Tax Talk with Straight Talk.
You give and you give. This tax season you get with Straight Talk Wireless. You get a reliable 5G network and unlimited data and a new Samsung Galaxy A15 for just $99. So you can give your janky phone to your kid.
Yeah!
Good talk.
Switch to Straight Talk for plans starting as low as $25 a line per month for 4 lines. Find us at Walmart and StraightTalk.com. For network management practices, visit StraightTalk.com. Device offer ends 4/14/24. In-store activation on single Silver Unlimited plan or higher required. Family plan discount with 4 lines all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Taxes and fees apply.
Hey everyone, it's Joe Montana. Spreading the word about pneumococcal pneumonia, a potentially serious bacterial lung disease that can be life-threatening. If you're 65 or older like me, you're at increased risk. So, what's the game plan? A strong defense. Pneumococcal pneumonia can strike at any time in any season, so you shouldn't wait to help protect yourself. Talk to your doctor or pharmacist about vaccination today and learn more at knowpneumonia.com. That's knowpneumonia.com.
Sponsored by Pfizer.
Medical notes this week. The world's first partial heart transplant is inspiring hope. In the spring of 2022, surgeons performed the surgery on an infant who needed a valve replacement. The traditional method of using non-living valves would have required multiple high-risk surgeries. Thankfully, the novel procedure has proven to be effective, producing 2 functioning valves and arteries that have grown with the child like normal. This research could pave the way for one heart to be used for 2 donors, one who needs a new muscle and the other who needs new valves. The study is published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. A new advancement in cancer treatment. Chemotherapy is often the go-to treatment for cancer, but some become resistant, growing unchecked without any other treatment options. Thankfully, a team of researchers have discovered that altering the cancer's DNA can block it from becoming resistant. The study is published in PNAS. And finally, are grocery taxes good for our health? Various cities around the country have begun to tax sugar-sweetened drinks, like soda and sports drinks, in the last few years. Research in JAMA Health Forum reveals that this additional cost has reduced purchases of these beverages. Scientists hope lawmakers see the positive changes that policies can have on societal health and spending. And that's Medical Notes this week. I'm Shel Lustig.
Denise has been playing jazz for 40 years. Last concert, one of the musicians fell sick with RSV. Respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV, is a highly contagious virus that can lead to breathing problems. This time, she's choosing to help protect herself with Pfizer's RSV vaccine, Abrysvo. Abrysvo is a vaccine for the prevention of lower respiratory tract disease caused by respiratory syncytial virus, RSV, in adults 60 years of age and older. Abrysvo is not for everyone and may not protect all who receive the vaccine. Don't get Abrysvo if you've had a severe allergic reaction to its ingredients. People with a weakened immune system may have a decreased response to Abrysvo. The most common side effects are tiredness, headache, pain at the injection site, and muscle pain. Ask your pharmacist or doctor about Pfizer's RSV vaccine, Abrysvo, respiratory syncytial virus vaccine. For full prescribing information, please call 1-844-989-7284 or visit Abrysvo.com. Brought to you by Pfizer.
Thank you for joining us this week and every week as we break down the science stories you need to know. You can find all of our past segments and guests on our website, radiohealthjournal.org, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and X for daily content. And tune in next week for another edition of Radio Health Journal.
For some children, a single surgery can turn an untreated cleft into a smile for life. But at Smile Train, we understand that most children need a little extra care. They need medical, dental, and emotional resources to grow healthy and strong, to express themselves clearly, and to navigate all of life's challenges so that their smiles light up the room as brightly as possible. Visit SmileTrain.org to learn how SmileTrain is supporting the cleft community with lifelong smiles.
This weather update is sponsored by Hansen HVAC, Heating and Cooling, your local Armstrong Air dealer of Phillips and Manitouish Waters.
This week on Viewpoints, you work hard, you get your down payment, you have an income, you can get a house. As of 2022, that changed, especially into 2023, and now we're here 2024.
For many people, buying a home feels impossible right now. Then,
many astronauts from the 1960s who worked on the early space shuttle program actually made public statements to the effect that this is not a safe vehicle and people should not be flying it.
The truth about America's retired space shuttle program. I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth this week on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.
Tax Talk with Straight Talk.
You give and you give. This tax season you get with Straight Talk Wireless. You get a reliable 5G network and unlimited data and a new Samsung Galaxy A15 for just $99. So you can give your janky phone to your kid. Yeah! Good talk.
Switch to Straight Talk for plans starting as low as $25 a line per month for 4 lines. Find us at Walmart and StraightTalk.com. For network management practices, visit StraightTalk.com. Device offer ends 4/14/24. In-store activation on single Silver Unlimited plan or higher required. Family plan discount with 4 lines all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Taxes and fees apply.
KFC's new smash potato bowl is out here looking like an absolute snack. For just $3.49, you get crispy secret recipe fries topped with creamy mashed potatoes, cheese sauce, bacon crumbles, and even more melty cheese. If you're looking to smash your hunger, grab KFC's new smash potato bowl for just $3.49. For a little extra, add nuggets to the mix. It's finger-licking good. Prices and participation may vary. Tax tip and fees extra.
Did you know that 2023 was the worst year for housing affordability in U.S. history? Recent U.S. Census Bureau data shows that the average median household income with two earners is about $75,000 a year. For this population, when factoring in loan approval and current high-interest mortgage rates, only 15% of homes for sale last year were within reach. This is the lowest number ever recorded, according to a recent report by real estate company Redfin. What was once part of the American dream now seems completely out of reach. One factor feeding into these high prices is limited inventory. Daryl Fairweather, chief economist at Redfin, says that home construction has dwindled over the last 15 years and now there's not enough supply to meet the growing demand.
In the 2010s, there were fewer homes built than in any decade going all the way back to the 1960s. One reason why so few homes were built had to do with the fallout from the 2008 financial crisis and foreclosure crisis, where home values sunk very quickly, and there was more pessimism about buying a home as seeing it as a good investment. So there wasn't much activity in constructing homes because that industry soured as well.
And on top of this, the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020 pushed mortgage rates down to around 3%. This is much lower than the current rate and encouraged more people to buy. One real estate expert who's covered this topic is Freddie Smith, a realtor and content creator who's gone viral on TikTok for his videos on the housing crisis. Smith says this mortgage adjustment helped many in the short term, but also created a massive long-term problem.
In 2020 with the pandemic, people were really hurting financially. Everything was shut down. So they decided, well, you know, it'll be a good idea. Let's lower interest rates to 2.6, 2.7, 3% so that people can refinance, or if someone wants to buy a home, it's even more affordable. So that sounded like a great idea, but then that's basically free money. So everyone did it, everyone started buying, and it destroyed the little supply we had left. So when you have all of 2020, 2021, into 2022, everyone, all investors, everybody was buying houses, and that's what rose the price. So they had to raise the interest rates to stop it from going even further.
Currently, interest rates for mortgages are at 6.6%, more than double what they were 4 years ago. Fairweather says this has not only made it difficult for people to buy, but has also discouraged current owners from selling.
Normally, when interest rates go up, which would cause buying a home to be less affordable. We see a pullback in people buying homes, which then causes home sellers to have to lower their prices in order to get their homes sold. But what happened instead is that people who own homes decided not to sell at all. They had these great mortgage rates during the pandemic that are fixed for 30 years. And if they can't get a price that would make them want to move and make them financially well off enough to buy another home at the new higher mortgage rates, they're simply not going to sell. And that's what happened. So we saw a pullback in both supply and demand, which allowed prices to stay high at the same time that mortgage rates were going up. So there wasn't any relief in affordability coming from prices, which made the mortgage rate problem even more dramatic.
This situation is frustrating, and it's hitting some groups harder than others. Smith says that millennials in particular are struggling the most on their path to home ownership.
Back when the boomers were in their 30s or late 20s, their biggest hurdle was saving up for a down payment. So that's why some of their greatest hits are just don't drink Starbucks, stop Netflix, because their whole hurdle was working hard to save that down payment. But their income, they could qualify for the house. The problem the millennials are having now is a boomer parent or grandparent could gift $50,000 for a down payment. If the millennial doesn't have $100,000 to $120,000 salary, you still can't qualify for the loan. So if you can't qualify for the house, what are you stuck doing? Renting. When you have a whole generation renting, rent prices go up.
Generally, the rule of thumb is to spend no more than 30% of your income on housing. 30 or 40 years ago, you could rent for just 18% of your paycheck. Today, Americans living in major cities can spend upwards of 40% of their income on rent. In comparison, when owning a home, that money is going towards a larger payment, and there are no surprises like large jumps in rent. Fairweather adds that the path to ownership can be tougher for people of color who are trying to get out of renting.
One is that they are less likely to be homeowners. So if they're first-time homebuyers, they're not coming with housing wealth to the transaction. They're not coming with equity that they can put towards a new home, so that puts them at a disadvantage. They typically have, on average, have lower credit scores. And the lower your credit score is, the higher the mortgage rate will be that you get. So that makes borrowing to buy a home even more expensive. Because they don't have equity, they're usually putting down small mortgage payment amounts, which increase the amount they have to borrow, which makes borrowing more expensive. Also, prices in predominantly Black and Brown neighborhoods have been going up faster than they have been in white neighborhoods, partially because they are more affordable and the more affordable segment of the housing market tends to increase faster in price.
One positive is that experts believe things will turn around this year. Right now, Fairweather anticipates interest rates going down, which will lead to greater affordability. However, this change could also lead to many more people joining the buyer's market, which could also drive up home prices. If you're looking to buy in the near future, Smith recommends getting all of your ducks in a row so you're ready to purchase as soon as interest rates drop. This means taking a look at savings totals, credit scores, and speaking with a mortgage lender ahead of time. Smith says that even with these items checked off, the path to home ownership in America is no easy one, and that needs to change.
It's just been a wild ride, and that's why we need to find something to change this so that millennials and Gen Z and future generations can have a shot at home ownership, or we'll have to redefine what the American dream or middle class is.
To find out more about Freddie Smith, Daryl Fairweather, and all our featured guests, visit viewpointsradio.org. For more behind the scenes, check out Viewpoints Radio on X, Facebook, and Instagram. This story was written and produced by Grace Galante. Our executive producer is Amira Zaveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Gary Price.
Coming up, a new narrative on the American Space Shuttle program when Viewpoints returns.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today?
I think my battery's dead.
With free battery testing and charging, we can help you get back on the road.
Get in zone.
So what if I need a new one?
No problem. We have the right battery for your car, starting at only
$89.99. Get in zone.
And what about my old battery?
We can recycle it right here at America's number one battery destination.
Get in zone. AutoZone.
Restrictions apply.
KFC's new smash potato bowl is out here looking like an absolute snack. For just $3.49, you get crispy secret recipe fries topped with creamy mashed potatoes, cheese sauce, bacon crumbles, and even more melty cheese. If you're looking to smash your hunger, grab KFC's new smash potato bowl for just $3.49. For a little extra, add nuggets to the mix. It's finger-licking good. Prices and participation may vary. Tax tip and fees extra.
This is a special alert to all Americans who own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles with an auto warranty about to expire or with no warranty coverage at all. Due to a decline in the economy, CarShield is announcing a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that is now available to the public to save any driver out-of-pocket expenses on future auto repairs. Call now to find out how you can pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Yes, you heard that correctly. Pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. An open phone line has been established for all drivers to call for a free quick quote. Call 800-484-5131 now. Drivers who are covered will not have to pay for covered repairs again. This protection plan is at an all-time low. Additionally, drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Call us for your free quick quote today. 800-484-5131. That's 800-484-5131. What do you have to lose? Call 800-484-5131. Again, 800-484-5131.
When we climb into our cars, we feel safe and protected by the technology. Many of us take it for granted that our vehicles will get us from point A to point B and back home again safely. But that was rarely the case for astronauts piloting the space shuttle. It made a total of 135 manned spaceflights from 1980 to 2011. Two of these ended in disaster, the Challenger in 1986 and the Columbia in 2003. Both resulted in the deaths of all seven crew members. One expert, Matthew H. Hirsch, raises serious ethical questions about the engineering choices people made due to political and economic pressures.
The more I study the space shuttle, the more I realize that engineers were actually never really complacent in that they never really thought the space shuttle was safe. They were never really lulled into a false sense of security or satisfaction. They just had a very different understanding and estimation of risk. And the more I studied the space shuttle, the more I realized that it actually wasn't a maintenance failure, that its loss was not due to what Vaughn described as the normalization of deviance, that it was not due to an organizational dysfunction within NASA, but rather to design decisions that were made very early in the program that traded safety for expediency, with the expectation that the space shuttle would never actually fly long enough to actually fail. Although the expectation among engineers was that if it did fly for as long as it actually did, there would be probably between one and three catastrophic failures of the vehicle and loss of crew, which is exactly what happened.
Matthew H. Hirsch is an associate professor of the history of science at Harvard University and author of the book Dark Star, A New History of the Space Shuttle. He believes that the Nixon administration initiated the space shuttle program for two reasons. The first was to deploy spy satellites into space, and the second was a political maneuver to bolster the president's re-election strategy.
Nixon was aware of the increasing sensitivity of the public to environmental matters and concerns about social justice, that he could somehow spin the space shuttle into a vehicle that would solve the ecological crisis, and even said that as much, and even the problems of race in America, which is really quite fascinating. So with one fell swoop, he could create a kind of space vehicle that would solve all of his leading geopolitical and domestic political problems. And when NASA came up with a device that they thought would be a suitable vehicle to do this, it cost $12 billion. And Nixon's cabinet said, well, that's great, but do it for six. And that led to the problems that were encountered. I think it actually was quite clever for these scientists and engineers to come up with something that looked like a space shuttle that they could build for half the money. But at the time they said, this is not safe. And this is not something that you're going to want to keep for a very long time because it doesn't do what you need it to do.
The idea for a space airplane that would have wings and a cockpit for aviators had been floating around scientific circles since the 1920s. German engineers said the design would be impractical and dropped the idea. And yet, the fantasy continued to reemerge. Finally, technological advancements in the 1960s made the design plausible.
But the pitch associated with it is that this vehicle would also be completely reusable. You wouldn't have to throw away rockets each time you tried to launch people or stuff into space. It would land on a runway, which means you could dispense with the naval armada that was necessary to recover space vehicles after they returned to Earth. And that combining these factors, one would create economies of scale that would make it very cheap to launch people and cargo into space and usher in a kind of golden age of space exploration.
In order to meet budget restrictions, safety concerns were not a priority. Hirsch says that for years, commentators blamed NASA for these deficiencies, but he says it wasn't NASA's fault.
There was an argument that NASA became ultimately a dysfunctional organizational culture that didn't have the ability to manage programs safely. And I think that NASA has probably been beaten up about this more than it should. It has a very, very difficult job, and what it's trying to do is nearly impossible. And I think it's probably as effective as any organization in history in managing really complex technical problems. It was given an impossible task because the space shuttle that was approved in 1972 was a cut-rate budget model that cut all kinds of corners in order to give the major constituencies what they wanted. And that was chiefly to give the Air Force a vehicle that was large enough to launch very sensitive national security payloads and to continue American civilian human spaceflight to satisfy the concern of Nixon's cabinet.
Engineers and astronauts knew from the get-go that the space shuttle wasn't safe and grew frustrated when politicians equated its safety to commercial airline travel.
This is dangerous work that the astronauts understood, and they hoped that their skill and that their knowledge of the system would help save their lives, but they also knew that they were flying a vehicle that was not very good and that there was very little they could do about that. And they were upset. They were not happy about it. Many astronauts from the 1960s who worked on the early on the space shuttle program actually made public statements to the effect that this is not a safe vehicle and people should not be flying it. And behind the scenes, there were a number of astronauts who were quite clear about their concerns, particularly Sally Ride, about the safety of the vehicle. Largely, it was political pressure that kept the space shuttle flying long past the point at which it should have been retired and replaced with something better.
Hirsch says one of the ironies of building a spaceship that looks like an airplane is that wings don't perform any function in space.
They're literally dead weight, and not only that, but they can create significant problems for you from reentry heating when you're trying to return to Earth and other phases of the trip. It's just a large area that can be punctured, that can be broken, that can't generate any lift because there's no air in space. And so engineers who've said, why bother building a space vehicle with a large structure attached to it that is only useful during perhaps 1% of the space vehicle's operating life, when really what we should do is imagine an entirely different kind of vehicle that just works in space well and safely. And capsules kind of are a compromise between these two particular ideas, and they have some ability to fly in the atmosphere, but they're also very good in space, and we know how to make them very well, and we can make them very, very safe. And that's why all of the leading space companies, both public and private entities, are basically working with some form of a capsule-type system.
And even today, there are people asking, is space exploration really necessary? Each shuttle deployment costs billions of dollars. We have so many problems right here on Earth. War, poverty, hunger. Why not spend money on solving these issues rather than sending people into space?
The question that has motivated most pioneers of space exploration has been the idea that humanity will never survive as a single planet species. Whether due to accident or neglect, our planet will become uninhabitable and humans have to be prepared to travel to other worlds if we wish for our culture to survive into the future. That is a really tough sell with Congress. It's hard to get anyone to think on a timescale of 100,000 years. And others say that space exploration serves a vital national cultural function, that our idea of ourselves demands that we do this.
At the end of the day, Hirsch believes the reasons why we explore space are to advance human invention and innovation.
$9 out of every $10 that gets appropriated to NASA gets spent on American universities and corporations. The space program is spending money on Americans to invent things and technologies that are useful. It's because of the space program that we have computers. It's because of the space program that we have a lot of the materials and other technologies that we use today. The United States government has been a profound and important, probably the most important incubator of science and technology, I would argue, in the history of the world.
Next week, in the second half of the show, we'll speak with one of the former space shuttle program managers for a behind-the-scenes look at the space shuttle program. Matthew H. Hirsch's book, Dark Star, A New History of the Space Shuttle, is available now online and in select bookstores. To find out more about our guests this week, visit viewpointsradio.org. For more behind the scenes, search Viewpoints Radio on Instagram, X, and Facebook. This segment was written and produced by Polly Hansen. Our executive producer is Amira Zaveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Marty Peterson.
Hey, it's your girl Lonnie Love, and this segment is brought to you by Metamucil. Are you ready to take charge of your digestive health? I know I am. That's why I'm teaming up with Metamucil for the 2-week challenge. Metamucil's 4-in-1 fiber helps promote regularity. Unlike many fibers, Metamucil's psyllium fiber gels to trap and remove waste from your digestive system, helping you feel lighter and more energetic after just 2 weeks. Try the Metamucil 2-week challenge today. Learn more at Metamucil.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Viewpoints returns in just a moment.
Tax Talk with Straight Talk.
You give and you give. This tax season you get with Straight Talk Wireless. You get a reliable 5G network and unlimited data and a new Samsung Galaxy A15 for just $99. So you can give your janky phone to your kid.
Yeah!
Good talk.
Switch to Straight Talk for plans starting as low as $25 a line per month for 4 lines. Find us at Walmart and StraightTalk.com. For network management practices, visit StraightTalk.com. Device offer ends 4/14/24. In-store activation on single Silver Unlimited plan or higher required. Family plan discount with 4 lines all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Taxes and fees apply.
KFC's new smash potato bowl is out here looking like an absolute snack. For just $3.49, you get crispy secret recipe fries topped with creamy mashed potatoes, cheese sauce, bacon crumbles, and even more melty cheese. If you're looking to smash your hunger, grab KFC's new smash potato bowl for just $3.49. For a little extra, add nuggets to the mix. It's finger-licking good. Prices and participation may vary. Tax, tip, and fees extra.
This is Viewpoints Explained. I'm Ebony McMorris. More than 2 years after the 2022 Beijing Winter Olympics, 9 U.S. figure skaters have learned that they're now Olympic gold medalists. This comes after a big decision from the Court of Arbitration for Sport, an independent tribunal, that Russian figure skater Kamila Valieva be retroactively disqualified from the 2022 Winter Games and banned from international competition for 4 years. Go back to December 2021. Valieva, who was 15 at the time, tested positive for an illegal performance-enhancing substance called trimetazidine. Medical experts say the drug can increase endurance and stamina. In 2014, a Chinese Olympic swimmer was handed a 3-month suspension after he tested positive for the substance. For Valieva, the late reported positive test in December 2021 triggered the opening of a larger investigation. However, since the 2022 Olympics were just 2 months away, she was still able to compete. It wasn't until last month that the investigation finally wrapped. She was disqualified and her Olympic achievements were wiped from the record. This created a huge shakeup in Olympic rankings, with Team USA now taking the gold medal spot, a first in U.S. figure skating history. Officials, athletes, and commentators all hope that this ruling will send a global message that there's a zero-tolerance policy on the use of banned substances. Russia, after all, has a long history of doping its athletes, even minors like Valieva. Even today, the Russian anti-doping agency, which is responsible for routinely collecting samples from its athletes, still remains non-compliant. The U.S. anti-doping agency continues to put pressure on the country ahead of the 2024 Paris Summer Olympics. As always, athletes also undergo substance use testing at the beginning and throughout Olympic competitions. That's Viewpoints Explained for this week. More in a moment.
Welcome to Culture Crash, where we examine what's new and old in entertainment. Oscar nomination day always comes with a lot of controversy and talk of snubs. This year definitely didn't have its shortage of snub talk, but most of that was focused on movies that were nominated for Oscars missing out on certain categories. While those conversations are worthwhile and will definitely continue through Oscar Sunday, let's take a moment to look back at some of the countless great movies of 2023 that received zero nominations at this year's Oscars. I was one of the many people hoping the Iron Claw could sneak into Best Picture, or at a minimum for Zac Efron to get a nomination for Best Actor. While that wasn't meant to be, that's okay, because The Iron Claw remains one of my favorites of 2023 and seems like a movie destined to make a big splash on streaming. I was also hoping Viola Davis could secure a spot in the Best Supporting Actress race for her role in the Michael Jordan sneaker movie Air. She already has one Oscar on four nominations, so